Hi, everyone. I'm Brian Kiley.
I'm Josh Youth.
And this is Engaging Culture, a podcast presented by Bridgeway Christian Church. On today's episode, we're going to talk about how to get your joy back when you feel like you've lost it. We're going to look at text-based communication and how to make sure you're not being a jerk when you do it. And finally, we'll end with a conversation about personality tests. What are their value? What are their limitations? How should we engage with them as believers? All of that and more on this episode of Engaging Culture. Well, hi, everyone. Welcome to another episode of the Engaging Culture Podcast. Brian Kiley, along with only Josh Oot.
You're welcome.
And I point that out because Judah is supposed to be here.
Correct.
And we don't know where he is.
But both of us have a very tight timeline, so we have to get started.
We have to get started. We'll see if he joins us later in the episode. It's a real mystery at this point. But Josh, what is the best thing you saw this week?
There is a rash of Instagram posts of NBA stars. I know.
That you started, there is a rash.
Yeah.
But, go on.
Yeah, there's ointment. Don't worry. Of NBA stars who are running Bible studies online.
What?
And they're doing these things. So Dwight Howard is a former NBA star.
Right.
He's doing Bible studies. And there's a couple more that I don't have the names in front of me, that they are doing these kind of open-ended Bible studies, just getting into the Word of God and sharing it in a very public platform on a regular basis right now. And,
wow.
One of them is actually running a group, an online Zoom group for NBA players.
Wow.
And
who?
So I can't remember his name and I wrote it down and I did not bring it with me.
Right.
But
awesome.
he's not like a top tier guy. He's a role player guy. Yeah. But I've seen this thing now and it's like professional athletes utilizing their platform to then talk about their faith, but in ways that isn't really preachy. It's very study-y.
Yeah.
And that difference is really big to me because, like, Tim Tebow, very preachy in the way that he approached faith and all that, which is great.
There's
100% value in that. But what these guys are doing is just getting into the Word and sharing the Word and coming alongside the Word, which is really cool to see because it's much more like an organic evangelism tactic.
And it seems like rooted in something. It's not for show. It's a little more kind of discipleship oriented.
Exactly.
That's awesome.
It's
I love that. I had not heard about that.
I'll have to send those over to you.
Yeah. Please do. My favorite thing I saw this week, best thing I saw this week was just simple. I recently signed on to be a volunteer assistant coach at my kids' school, coaching track, coaching the distance runners, which has been super fun.
They did not take my application for coaching distance running or any running.
All that expertise out the window.
I know.
But our first meet this last week was super fun because so many of the kids improved so much. And our fastest kid, who doesn't even normally train with the distance runners, he trains with the sprinters, but he's just an incredibly talented runner. Yeah. And he's a great kid. Like, he's played on sports teams with my son in the past. He was so shocked by his own time that, like, his reaction at the end was just, like, priceless. He couldn't believe it.
Gosh,
and to see
so
how
great.
Well he had done was phenomenal. And just to see such improvement. And just, like, the track and the running community, it's just, there's a lot of positivity there. And
that's
it's
cool.
Just cool to see kids supporting each other, encouraging each other. And I tell our athletes, like, yeah, on some level, sure, we're competing against other schools and this and that. But ultimately, you're competing against yourself, trying to improve. And I love that element of it, that we can celebrate the kid who wanted to run a 5:30 but ran a 5:15, which is incredible. And we can also celebrate the kid who wanted to run 9 minutes and ran 8:45.
That's awesome.
Like, we're like, man, that's awesome. It's improvement, getting better, and trying to have fun while running, which I've heard is possible. But I loved it. Can't wait to
that
go
part's
to our next
a
meet.
Myth.
Next meet later this week. We'll be right back. So, Josh, I don't know if you have heard about this, but the world can be kind of a stressful place to live sometimes.
Huh.
Had this news reached you?
No, I mean, we're in the middle of a remodel. My wife's got rehearsals every night. And yeah, stress is something I know nothing about.
Well, and luckily, just world events are very peaceful and not at all chaotic or panic inducing.
It's only my schedule, though.
So, so obviously, whether we're talking about personal challenges or societal challenges or things like that, there's a lot that can cause us to be pretty stressed out. And stress or nervousness about what's happening around us is one of many factors that can lead to something called anhedonia. Josh, do you know what anhedonia is? Well, I know you do, but
I'm going to pretend that I don't. What is it, Brian?
So it comes from the same word park as hedonism, which means pleasure or fun, kind of it's a synonym for fun. Anhedonia means basically a lack of ability or decreased ability to feel feel pleasure from things we once enjoyed. It's essentially a lack of joy and kind of a blah.
Yeah, it's like a numbness. Sometimes you'll hear people refer to it as, I just feel a bit numb.
Yeah, and I think on some level, we all experience this from time to time. Now, the extent of it, I think, varies. But, like, I don't know, just looking at you personally, like, to what extent can you relate to this? Like, you haven't seen it in your own life.
Oh, yeah. So I think numbness is one of those things that pops up throughout my life, mostly in connection with what's going on or lack of what's going on in life. And so if, for me, it's very circumstantial. Mm-hmm. And when circumstances are yielding less than desired results, or you're just kind of apathetic towards things, like you start to feel like the things that I used to do just don't bring me joy. And it's not quite depression because this is different than depression, where depression is more like chemically based or other pieces to that. This is just more of the things that we used to do just aren't quite triggering the same kind of responses.
Yeah. It's interesting for me. I've heard a lot about that whole, oh, I don't want to do things that I normally think are fun.
Right.
And that's rarely an issue for me. I think the idea of, can I do something enjoyable? Like, that's always been appealing to me. However, where I relate to this is oftentimes if I'm feeling very stressed out, if I'm feeling very anxious, I have a very difficult time being sort of mentally and even emotionally present with what I'm doing
really
that's
good.
Fun. So maybe I'm out playing basketball or pickleball or you know, playing video games with my kids or something like that. But just in the back of my mind, I'm like stewing over something. And I have a hard time kind of turning that off. Now, the point of the segment is not just to grouse about how this is a thing and it happens, but we want to talk about, okay, how do we snap out of this? And we did some reading this week around this that I thought gave us some really practical tips we can take when kind of these anhedonia, I don't know why I can't pronounce this word, anhedonia type symptoms start to pop up. And certainly some of them, I think, have a particular relevance to us as believers. So help us out here. What are some ways we can kind of start to deal with it?
One of the things that they suggested that I thought was actually really good for us as believers is keep a daily record of things you're grateful for. This attitude of gratitude, to make it all rhyme, so that means it means more.
More spiritual.
It's
definitely
more spiritual, yeah. But honestly, when we have a grateful heart, and our posture is to look for the positive in life, our perspectives do change. It's kind of like how you can actually trick your brain into thinking that you're happy by forcing yourself to smile for a period of time. Like, then all of a sudden your brain starts to release those hormones that make you actually feel happy, because we are just dumb animals, like, apparently. Like, you can trick yourself into that. This isn't tricking yourself. This is realigning where you're looking. And I think oftentimes when we get to that anhedonia state, it's because of where our focus is.
Now you're just showing off how easily you pronounce it.
I'm
becoming stressed by that.
I was so stressed about to say it. I'm like, I'm going to butcher this, but I'm going to lean in.
You
like
nailed it.
Like an Old Testament name. You just say it with confidence.
That's right.
Yeah.
No, so I love the gratitude element. And while I've never been much of a journaler, I'm very big on gratitude. And I find that when I start slipping into that kind of complaining or feeling apathetic, like, there is that time where I kind of have to give myself a little bit of the, you know, hey, Brian, like, you've got a lot that you can be thankful for. And not in like a guilt kind of way, because I think sometimes we can try to guilt ourselves into feeling thankful.
Right.
But actually just that sense of going, like, hold up, let's just shift perspective here real quick and remember, yes, things are stressful. Yes, things are difficult. I don't think the point of gratitude is to sweep things under the rug. But so much of our mentality depends less on our reality and more how we're reacting to it and what we're choosing to focus on. Right?
Totally.
So what's another one we can use?
This one's a little bit... we'll take a little bit of nuance, but replace negative thoughts with neutral ones, I thought was actually a really helpful idea. Instead of saying, they use an example of, I'm not as close to people as I want to be, or I feel very lonely. Instead of saying that, you say, while I'm not as close as I want to be with someone, they still check in on me.
Yeah.
And they're finding the neutral space that as, you know, and I was thinking about this within our, because we're doing this big house remodel thing right now that's really stressful because-
I've heard that's going really well and easy and simple.
Oh, every time we do something, I can't wait to have the roofer out now because we're replacing floors. I know.
I think you're doing it right. Go ahead.
Yeah. I should not be doing the install. I got to sidetrack here. Where am I?
Neutral thoughts.
Neutral thoughts. Yes. Thank you. But in the midst of this remodel, instead of me focusing on how stressful it is to try to get the house prepared, it's like, you know, this is stressful, and it's a lot of work to get this stuff done, and I wish I didn't have to do this much work, but look at how God is providing for us that we actually get to do this, and that this is... this will be such a blessing to our family and to the people that we minister to by having a home that is more put together.
Yeah.
Like that shift of like, it's, yeah, this is not, this week stinks.
Right.
But, you know, in 2 weeks from now, it's going to be a blessing.
Yeah. That sense of looking toward the goal,
right,
I think can be really helpful in getting through challenges of any number of situations and just be able to go, okay, this isn't forever. We're seeking to get to a goal. And I've heard Pastor Lance talk about this on a few different occasions, kind of the idea that our current prayer requests usually stem from like answers to our old ones, you know,
yes,
where we go, oh God, would you help me get through this? This remodel is terrible on this house. He's like, oh, you mean that house you prayed for?
Right.
And that's not to say that, the stress of the moment is invalid, but I think what you just shared with us is so important to be able to go, okay, yes, this is difficult, but hold up. Let's look back and go, okay, there's evidence of God's provision here
100%.
In that he has provided a house, and we're working toward a future where we would go, the house can be utilized in so many different ways. I think that can help balance just getting stuck in the like, oh my gosh, the roofer's out again. Oh my gosh, it's not going right. Oh my gosh, it's so expensive. Again, not sweeping under the rug, but just helping with that.
Totally.
So give us one more.
The other one that I thought was really helpful was try doing something you used to enjoy. And so it's the things that you may have not done in a long time. And so I was a worship pastor for 6 years before we moved to back to California. And in that transition back, I did not play music very much. Mm-hmm. There was a lot of emotional pain and trauma kind of involved in that. And so it was a very complicated piece. But what I found about a year later was going back into doing that was reminding myself of how much I love this and how much I enjoy this and that, oh, that's right. I can do this.
Yeah.
I do enjoy this. I am good at this. I like this. This is now a joy for me as opposed to just a trigger of trauma that it was for such a long time.
Well, and what a great example of just, I think that so many of us maybe have situations where we've dealt with something traumatic or something terrible and it's sort of stolen our joy from a particular activity that we used to get a lot of life and enjoyment out of. In your case, it was music. And to be able to go, okay, I'm not going to jump back into worship leading and just let that trigger me in all the 87 ways it's going to because of your trauma. But just to be able to go, okay, I want to dip my toe in a little bit. And I like even the advice that the individual quoted in this article says the goal isn't to enjoy the activity right away, but it's just, okay, we're going to try to just be more neutral about it this time. Mm-hmm. And that can be helpful moving forward.
Absolutely. What about you? What stuck out to you?
So I am a huge believer in the power of our thoughts and then the power of the way that we talk to ourselves. I just told someone today to basically tell, I told them to like tell your inner voice to be nice to you today. And I'll do that with people from time to time. But it talks about this idea of treat yourself like you treat a best friend.
Yeah.
And I think about, and I've done a lot of teaching on the idea of the inner critic. I think about so often, if somebody spoke to my wife or my children or even a friend the way that I often speak to myself, like I would have a real problem with that person. And to be able to go, okay, I need to like chill out and talk to myself the way that I would talk to you or Judah or Lance or
Absolutely.
Like talk to some, like I would talk to a friend. And I think to be, I think that the inner critic is so powerful because we don't recognize it's at work. And right. when we start to realize, man, I'm actually being way more critical of myself than anyone else is, or we start to even spot it in others where maybe people are apologizing for something that we would go like, you don't need to apologize for that. And then we look at ourselves and go, oh my gosh, I do that same thing. I think that we can bring ourselves down so much if we just are constantly in critic mode. And too often, and I know I'm guilty of this, you don't actually take time to just, hey, no, I'm actually not a terrible person. I have some good qualities. I have something to offer the world. And that can be a real mood booster.
Absolutely. And as you're saying that, I was thinking, not only would I not put up with that, with how somebody else would treat my family, if you were to talk to me the way that I talk to me, like, I would hate you, and we would probably...
We wouldn't be friends.
We would not be friends. Yeah. Like, the amount of abuse that we endure from ourselves is quite remarkable.
Yeah.
And it's incredibly unhelpful, and I think that's actually the work of the enemy in a lot of ways, is discouragement, especially within an affluent community, discouragement is your greatest weapon. If you convince people that it's not worth the time, and it's like they're not worth the time, that this is going terribly, that they self-elect out of something, you don't have to do a whole lot. Like that's like, oh, this is easy pickings. And when you're in an affluent society like we are, it's very easy for us to get discouraged and like compare ourselves to all these other people that we think don't have these negative inner voices. You know, Rob Joseph probably doesn't have a negative voice because he's so positive all the time. Those Canadians, I tell you.
Canadians.
You know, but like I think about that, and it's like, well, if I compare myself to Rob, who's like, you know, the center of all that is joyful. I'm saying this because I know he's going to listen to this, and it's going to bug him that I did that. But
listener of the show, great Rob Joseph,
Joseph. But I think that's part of that discouragement part is that we discourage ourselves so much because we're comparing ourselves to others. Where if we can change our inner monologue, and it's like, well, how would I talk to Rob? Well, I'd be like, Rob, you're such a great guy to be around. Like, why don't I talk to Josh that way?
Right, totally. Yeah, no, that's absolutely true. And even that sense of being able to, this sounds weird, but like encourage ourselves in the same manner that we would encourage others. And then there's the other side of that, just going, I do think there's something to be said for like actually taking the time to encourage others. I think that that helps us out as well.
Totally.
There's one more quick one I want to point out that this article talked about. And the article's from a secular source. So it says, try mindfulness. And I think from a Christian standpoint, we would go try something like centering prayer or quiet or just kind of quiet, sort of paying attention to your own body and kind of paying attention to God's presence with you. I found that to be so extraordinarily helpful in managing anxiety. And I've sought other care for it as well. It's not a replacement for therapy or anything like that by any means. But I think that ability to go, okay, God is present right now, and to almost kind of like develop the practice of being present to your own body. How am I feeling? What am I thinking? What's going on with me emotionally? Oh, I'm sensing I'm angry. Like what? I don't mean to make it sound cheesy, but like really asking like, okay, what is that? All right, I'm sensing I'm about to speak right now, but I feel like I'm about to speak out of anxiety. Is that what's going on? All right. And I've saved myself a lot of trouble by developing that filter.
And that's really good. And the times that I'm healthiest emotionally and spiritually are the times that I do these kind of silent walks. So what I mean by that is like I don't have headphones in, I'm not listening to anything, and I'm not walking for pace for exercise. It is a stroll at best, and it's just a, I'm going to go for a walk. The dog's going to be with me. You know, yeah, she needs to get out and do stuff, but it's like, okay, I'm just being mindful and being present.
Yeah.
And I'm not trying to, you know, monitor heart rate or try to do this to be physically healthy. Yeah. Like, all that stuff matters, but honestly, it's really just being present with the Lord.
Yeah.
That's how I would define mindfulness in a Christian term, is more presence.
Yeah. And you just use the example of, it's a quiet walk because you didn't bring your headphones. So many of our quiet spaces, it is so easy to fill those spaces with noise. And certainly that's not a problem in any number of situations. But I mean, I think about, for me, exactly what you just described, for me, that's oftentimes my car ride. Mm. Of like, nah, I'm not going to turn something on. And I have a pretty short commute. But I want to take that time just to like breathe and like be present. And truly, like, think about how I'm feeling and invite the Lord into that.
Absolutely.
And I think there's just a lot of help with that. So if you are finding yourself feeling joyless, you need not be stuck there. It is not a prison. And with God's help, you can take some practical steps to move out of it. Check out the article for a few more tips, and we will be right back.
So much of our communication nowadays is in a written form, like texting or email. And I had a little experience this last week with one of our communication specialists, Courtney, who is of a younger generation. I am 42.
She is much younger than we are.
I am 42. She is not. And we're having this conversation, and she had asked a question. I responded to the question, and I got like nothing back. And then she made this comment in my office. It's like, well, after you yelled at me via text.
Oh boy.
I'm like, and she was kidding.
Yes.
Like, she's got a very dry sense of humor.
She does.
But it was like, I went back. She's like, yeah, that was an unnecessary period. And I was like, it's the end of a sentence.
What do you want from me?
Yeah, like, do we just not use punctuation anymore? Yeah. And then I found this article, like, the next day, and I sent this to everybody because it was, "Are You a Hostile Punctuator?" is the name of the article out of Time
Hostile
Magazine.
Hostile Punctuator.
And it's from March 28th, so it's just a couple days ago. And it was really interesting. And one of the sections is, you use periods when you don't have to. And this idea that my correct grammatical punctuation was wrong and communicated a tone that I did not intend. And so I asked a couple other people, and I found out I am a hostile texter. This is me.
Wow.
Completely unbeknownst to me, I am screaming at people via text message and no idea.
You know, Josh, maybe on the air of the podcast is not the best format in which to tell you this, but I will say you are not the warmest digital communicator I have ever come across in my life. I think I know you well enough that I, figured out how to filter it appropriately.
So seriously, this is like, if you've ever watched How I Met Your Mother, this is the glass shattering.
Oh, the glass shattering.
And so the whole premise of the joke on that show is that when you shatter the glass about something that somebody does, you can't help but see it from that point on. So if there's somebody that says the word like, and you point that out to somebody, and then they keep repeating that word over and over again, it just starts to bug you. Mm-hmm. Well, this digital communication tonal exploration that I've now entered into is glass shattering on myself. I had no idea. Like, none whatsoever. And my wife was like, oh yeah. And so it's just like completely unknown to me. I thought I was just communicating. Apparently, I'm a jerk when I text.
Apparently. I have nothing to add. We'll be right back.
Don't be like Josh.
That is so funny. Okay, but to the broader point, there are, I think, some real challenges of communicating in our digital world that if we're not paying attention to them.
Correct.
We can run into some problems, right?
Yeah, and what I've pulled out of some of this, and this is very young exploration on my end, but some of the things that I've discovered is my directness in trying to be clear comes across as aggressive.
Mm-hmm.
And so when that happens, like, it's one of those, I'm not really sure how to soften this, because face to face, I can use the exact same words,
yep,
but you could hear my tone.
Yep.
But in written form, you can't hear my tone. You can only implant tone.
Yep.
Tone is only perceived. It's not really delivered.
Yep.
And so you have to figure out how to set up a conversation so that the person you're texting with or emailing understands the tone in which it's meant.
Yep. Yeah, that's absolutely right. And that is a critical thing to remember, that in face-to-face communication, experts say 70 to 90% of communication is nonverbal. Tone, facial expression, body language, etc. And to your point, we have none of that when it comes to digital communication. And the challenge is, and you alluded to this, because that is not provided to us by the person communicating with us, we fill in the blanks. So like if you've ever had somebody recount to you maybe a tense email exchange, you might say, I said to them, hey, I thought we were having lunch today. And they wrote back to me, well, no, it's tomorrow. Like even that, what I just did there, where you sort of intonate this sort of snarky, snide tone, which we never say. And then I said to Josh, oh my gosh, I thought we were gonna, you know, like no one ever puts that on themselves, right?
No, and we end up texting in ways that we don't actually speak. Mm-hmm. And so when somebody sends me something or says, hey, is this right? In a normal conversation, I wouldn't say no. But in texting, right. I look back, I'm like, holy moly, I start with no. And then corrective, and I sound like a jerk. I am trying not to use the alphabet here, but
starting next week at Bridgeway, Hostile Texters Anonymous, led by.
Well, I'm not giving it up. So, like, let's not.
I do think there is an important element on the listening side or the receiving side, and I've tried to get better at this myself. Because I catch myself tending to interpret things negatively and all of that, is to assume the best.
Right.
And if tone is ambiguous, which it virtually always is in digital communication, assume a positive tone. Mm-hmm. Now, I do think also there's a space to go. So if I'm going to – if I say this to people every once in a while, that first of all, I don't like to communicate anything tense in writing for all the reasons that we're talking about. But if I have to issue correction, sometimes people send me things to edit. And I'll tell them, hey, I'm just going to give you very direct feedback in my editing, and it's probably going to sound mean. Mm-hmm. Picture me writing this with a smile on my face.
Right.
You know, just that little bit of going, I'm just going to not waste time here. I'm just going to give you what I've got. But I do think it's important to preface it with that so that you're not crushing people. Now, second, because I wanted to talk about just kind of the tone and all of that, there is the punctuation element, which the whole thing that a period can feel cold, that was new to me.
Completely blew my mind.
But it kind of makes sense now that I, like, if somebody writes,
it doesn't make sense. And and I'll put this in a text so it's even more harsh. It doesn't make sense. No. I get it. It's just, for me, the period means end of thought.
Yeah. Well, and here is one of the issues then that kind of experts in digital communication encourage us to adapt, as I've done some more research onto this, is that so we're all taught our entire lives when it comes to punctuation, we think about it grammatically. Right. Use punctuation correctly grammatically, which, yes, in Jesus' name, may we use punctuation correctly, as I just walked by a sign on my way up here with an unnecessary unnecessary apostrophe in it. But we also have to consider how our punctuation sounds emotionally, which sounds crazy if you're talking about writing a paper at school, because that would be a non-issue. But when it comes to text messaging, emailing, that sort of person-to-person communication, there is an emotional element to our punctuation that we sort of ignore at our own peril.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's one of the challenges when you're in leadership in any organization is how do you engage in confrontation via email or text when it's a group scenario. Now, when it's a one-on-one thing, obviously you just go back, but there are certain instances where somebody will, we get this in ministry a lot, where somebody unloads on us, and they use very inflammatory language like, you're terrible and you're not following the Bible. It's not a discussion. It's very obvious from the word choice, not their punctuation, just their word choice. Right. But they've included five or six other people to essentially publicly shame you.
Yep.
And when that happens, my personal stance is you've set the platform. I'm now going to respond in
same
kind.
Same platform.
In the same platform because others need to know that it's being handled, and I want others to know what I said in reply.
Yeah.
Because, and that's accountability.
Yep.
Both ways. Because I can go to you, I can go to Lance, I can go to somebody else and say, hey, that reply came off a little hard. And I don't know that that's exactly what you intended because I know your heart.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's like, actually, I did have to come down hard because of these five things.
Yeah.
And they included this in a very public forum.
Right.
And so, like, people will point to Matthew, well, you should go back one-on-one, all that kind of stuff. I get that in a lot of instances.
Yeah.
But when they set a platform of public space, it changes the dynamic quite a bit.
Sure, that ultimately if an offense is committed publicly, correction needs to be public. And I've even had instances where people have sent criticism to me and included lots of people, and I've only replied back to that person directly.
Right.
And I've thought to myself, okay, well now this sort of unjust criticism is just sort of hanging in the air.
Yeah.
So I think that there's definitely a place for that. But when we go back to just sort of the day-to-day stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Here's something that I wrestle with a lot, because on the one hand, I want to be a friendly texter, not a hostile texter.
Right.
On the other hand, sometimes it can feel a little hokey, but a lot of communication experts suggest adding friendly words or adding kind emojis, smiley faces, and things of that nature, just to make sure we're communicating tone. Like, for example, just today, my mother, God bless her, who would be very probably not thrilled to hear me sharing this anecdote, texted myself.
Go on.
Myself and my sister-in-law saying, any takers free. It comes in two pieces if you don't want both. No picture. A little while went by, and then an hour later, she texted back, never mind, it's gone now. And I wrote back, next time it would be helpful to include a picture. And I very intentionally did the little winky tongue out emoji just to know, I'm being funny, not, hey mom, next time include a picture. Like, it's just silly. She obviously forgot, and it was just sort of a funny thing. And then, you know, my sister-in-law commented about, sounds like a great mystery item.
Yes.
And it was a desk, very boring, and I don't need one. But I think there is a place to be able to go, okay, there are times when an exclamation point instead of a period can make things sound friendlier. There are times when including an emoji can clarify tone a little bit. And certainly we all know those people who over emoji text messages, and, you know, to each their own. But
we don't have to talk about Pastor Dylan right now, but
since you brought it up. I think that that's a place to be able to go, okay, I don't want to put it entirely on the person to fill in the gaps of ambiguous tone. Instead, I want to be proactive about just making it clear that I'm being friendly here and not harsh, right?
Yeah, and you have to do it from an actually authentic space, because if you're being harsh, don't say, you're an idiot, smiley face, winky emoji. Like,
what? I shouldn't do that?
No, you shouldn't. Oh, that was a bit harsh. I'll just put a little smiley face next to that. That's...
Nice try, dum-dum, smiley face.
Right. Yeah, that's helpful. Yeah. Unless that's your nickname for each other, which, you know...
That's a whole different issue.
Yeah, that's a call your marriage therapist. But an authentic, like, I'm trying to communicate tone. So what I've actually started doing when I have an email, specifically with longer emails, this is really detailed, it's like, hey, I have some things to say in here that are going to help, but for clarity's sake, I'm trying to make this as concise as possible.
Yeah.
Read this with the smile that I'm intending.
Yep.
And then it's up to them to kind of go through. And so I had an interaction with someone a while back where they provided some feedback, and some of it was actually really helpful, and some of it was like, not so helpful, but I needed to engage in the discussion because they also don't live locally.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, how do we do that? And I put that little preface and the follow-up emails that I got back from them was like, oh, that was so helpful. Thank you for that disclaimer too, because that helped me kind of read this in the tone. And that stuff really does make a difference.
We're giving the people we're communicating with a little bit of help.
Yeah.
And then we've kind of talked about this already, but I think just to close out, that idea of going, okay, I don't want to assume tone. If tone sounds negative, I as the recipient, then maybe I need to ask a question to clarify instead of assuming the person is trying to be hostile and not ask a passive aggression. Wow, Josh, you sound really angry. Is that right? Like that's not a helpful way of phrasing the question. And I think, I don't know, scripture talks so much about, I think about Romans 12, live peaceably with others as far as it depends on you. Colossians 4 talks about this idea of speaking with graciousness. And I think that that even includes receiving speech with graciousness, that so often we just get so locked up in our assumptions, and I want to be very careful in my own heart, especially if I'm in a bad mood or if I'm feeling a certain kind of way, to not assume the negative in text-based communications. And also, frankly, like, I want to have grace for people who maybe just communicate in written format in a way that is not my preference or seems a little bit cold, but it's not purposeful, right? And
sometimes I'm purposeful.
Sometimes you're purposeful, but I was going to leave that out. But I recognize in what I'm saying, it sounds like I'm talking about you. I'm not. I don't mean people that you're close with. I mean, like, you know, text messages or emails we might exchange with folks who we have less relational equity. I think that a lot of fights and hurt feelings can be saved and prevented if we just really kind of make a commitment to assume the best until given reason to assume otherwise, and don't fill in a lack of tone with snide, harsh, whatever.
Yep.
All right, we'll be right back. Josh, it is no secret that there are any number of personality tests out there. And I don't know about you, I personally miss the era of not so much the personality test, but the BuzzFeed quiz, where it was like, what kind of breakfast cereal are you? Or I was waiting for the quiz that was like, what kind of stupid quiz are you? That would be very sort of meta about all of it. But, other than the fact that the quiz helped me recognize that I am, in fact, a Kellogg's Corn Pop,
wow.
I did not find those ones to be all that beneficial. But, you know, it's okay. I've made my peace with it. But when we talk personality tests, we talk about things like Myers-Briggs and the Enneagram and StrengthsFinders and the Big Five personality assessment. There's all sorts of them out there. And certainly I've found myself in a lot of conversations over the years within Christian community about their value, about their limitations. So that's why we're doing this segment. And start us off with, what are some of the benefits of these types of personality tests?
These personality tests can help us discover how God initially created us. Mm-hmm. As long as we put it in that box, that this is how God has designed me to interact with the world. Mm-hmm. And sometimes those personality tests will reveal a lot about just how we interact with God. Mm-hmm. That my walk with the Lord is going to look a little bit different than your walk with the Lord simply because we're made different.
Yeah.
And God connects with us differently. So for those who have multiple kids in their home that they're raising, that how you connect with each child is different.
Right.
And because there's different likes, there's different interests, there's different abilities, there's just a myriad of things that are different with each person. This kind of helps you discover yourself a little bit, because it's easy to think that everybody thinks the same, everybody acts the same, and how come they have a deep relationship with the Lord because they journal every day? Like, well, Pastor Brian doesn't journal every day, and he has a deep relationship with the Lord. Mm-hmm. You know, we're just different.
Yeah.
Like, that is a different piece. And I think that's a really valuable part for us, is that it helps us to see ourselves through God's eyes in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
And I think there's something about the personality test that really drives us towards discovery that is much deeper than just You know what?
I'm a corn pop.
I'm a corn pop. Yes. No more BuzzFeeds. But it drives us to something that's like, okay, this is where I am now. Is this where I want to be?
Yeah.
And that discipleship is a pathway.
Right.
Discipleship moves us somewhere, and we can't develop what we don't evaluate.
Yeah.
And without that evaluation part of like, hey, this is where I am right now. Mm-hmm. This is my personality right now. Is this what I like? Do I like these things?
Yeah.
Or is there something that I want God to start working on me in? Yeah. What about you?
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right. And I want to just, before I even get to my things, I think to hit on what you just said, there's a concept called naive realism, and that's sort of what you just hit on right there. And that is that the way we view the world is kind of the objectively true way to view the world,
right,
and that everybody else views the world the same way. And I think that some of the language used in different personality tests can really help us recognize the fact that, in fact, others don't view the world the same way that we do. And if I treat everybody as if I'm interacting with me, that's going to be a problem, and I'm going to end up hurting people. And I think that's where you go, okay, yes, these tests help us understand ourselves, but I think there's so much value in the way that they help us understand each other. And that was going to be one of the key things I was going to share, is that it does help reduce conflict by helping us see that differences between people aren't necessarily like character flaws, but they're just personality differences. I also think that in a team setting, there is a benefit to just the common language that a test creates. So as much as, and we'll get to some of the challenges here in a minute, I've kind of soured a little bit on the helpfulness of some of these tests over the years.
Yeah.
But I look at like the Enneagram, for example, and it can be helpful shorthand to help understand different people's motivations. If somebody tells me that they identify as an 8, that is, like I said, that is a quick way for them to communicate some things about them. And that shows me, okay, they're very different than somebody who might identify as a 9. And that can be beneficial in the way that I would interact with that person, in the way that I interpret their actions, those types of things. And then also, I think that, and you alluded to this a moment ago, that personality tests can be a great starting point for self-reflection, and they can help us kind of determine what does personal and spiritual growth look like for me in this season. So if the results of a personality test help me understand, folks with your personality tend to, for example, when they get stressed out, tend to act pretty controlling, which I have taken tests that say that about me. And as I've observed my own behavior, I've realized, wow, that really is true. And like my heart is to not be controlling. I don't like being controlled. I don't want to control others. And to be aware, because so often in stress, we're just reactive, right? So even just to be able to go, okay, my tendency is going to be controlling in this moment. I want to be aware of that so I can notice it and fight against it. So I think those are some of the benefits. What are some of the ways that personality tests can be used improperly or just some weaknesses?
When they become excuses for bad behavior, that is an improper use of it.
So give us an example.
In the Enneagram cycle, one of them is an 8, and an 8 is a strong personality who enjoys an argument, not because they like to fight with people, but they like the exchange of ideas, and they like the banter back and forth. It's kind of a lawyerly personality type.
Yeah.
What that can turn into is you don't like what I'm saying because I'm an 8 and I'm just direct. It's like, well, no, you're just a jerk.
You're just being mean.
Look at Josh's text messages. Like this,
he texts like an 8.
He texts like an 8. It's that wing 8.
Yeah.
No, but there's things like that that become an excuse for bad behavior or an excuse to not work on yourself.
Yeah.
That's a bad part. The other limitation is it's not the gospel.
Right.
Like, let's remember what this is. This is a tool. It's man-made. It's flawed.
Yeah.
It's not perfect. We don't worship it. We don't try to integrate it into our life more than trying to be in God's word. Like, if you're spending more time studying personality tests, you're in a very dangerous territory because you're being developed by the world and not by scripture itself. And so we need to put that into perspective.
Yeah. At its worst, I think personality tests can become sort of this like navel gazing activity where 100%. We're just so locked in on trying to kind of figure ourselves out as best we can that it becomes very self-serving and not this way of like, okay, how can I understand myself better for the purpose of being healthy in my relationship with the Lord and showing up better for other people? And I completely agree with you that the kind of the labeling or the excuse making that we tend to do can be a problem. I also think we just need to be honest about the fact that most of these tests have little to no scientific backing. That's the correct. Biggest reason why kind of Myers-Briggs, Enneagram, I'm like, okay, sure, whatever. There's some value to it, but I'm not going to take it as like rock solid. Now, the Big Five personality test actually has a ton of research around it, and that's one that evaluates you in five traits: openness to experience, conscientiousness, extroversion, agreeableness, and neuroticism. Mm-hmm. And it's based on a ton of research. It's highly stable over time. You don't tend to change. Yeah. And it allows for some kind of nuance and complexity, which can be pretty helpful. But even then, to your point from earlier, to be able to go, like, this isn't the gospel. This isn't, like, it's not like a box now that you're stuck in. If anything, I think a personality test can be a little bit more like, I don't know, like the dashboard of a car, mm-hmm. which kind of describes current reality and lets us know to what extent might we want to make some adjustments, might we want to do some things differently, to what extent do these tests help make us aware of some of our blind spots? Like yeah. they always say that, you know, the Enneagram is best sort of discovered rather than tested for.
Correct.
And when you start reading about the Enneagram type that like makes you squirm and makes you uncomfortable, like
that's probably the one. That's
probably you. I have this memory of like traveling with my wife, and we were reading this big Enneagram book, and we were reading about each other's numbers, and she would read about sevens, which is what I identify as, and just after, I don't know, 15 minutes, I'm like, all right, that's enough. Like, let's read about yours for a little while. Like, I can't handle anymore. Yeah. And then she'd read about ones, and she'd be like, okay, enough. We got to go back. Let's read about something else.
Yeah.
And there's only, because it's sort of uncomfortable in the sense that it forces you to kind of face some of the stuff we'd rather not
face. It does, but some of the times what these personality tests also allow us to do is to identify stress and unhealth in our life.
Yeah.
Because what the good ones will do is it'll say, here are the positives, here are the negatives. And if you're experiencing a lot of negatives, you're probably out of balance.
Yeah.
You should experience a little bit of both.
Yeah, no, that's true.
You know, there should be some balance here. And if it's all positive, you're probably ignoring a whole bunch of things going on. And what that does within our own formation is to recognize that the Lord is transforming us mm-hmm. over time.
Yeah.
And if we are fully balanced in the way that we are being transformed by the Lord, we're going to see these things kind of shift back and forth.
Yeah.
If we're living in all the stress indicators, like that's the Enneagram language under stress. Like you'll see this going through. StrengthsFinders calls them barriers.
Yeah.
That if you're living in the barriers, you're probably leveraged. There's something else going on in life that you should be paying attention to. And the Lord can use that to awaken us to what's going on around us.
Now, you had an experience recently that I think is worth sharing, where a number of us kind of engaged with a personality test that you and I had both done before.
Multiple times. On multiple
occasions. But this time, you were a little bit surprised by your own results.
Yeah.
And then in processing that with some other members on our team, that helped you realize some things. Share with us about that, because I think that it might be sort of enlightening to others who may want to kind of think through this in their own lives and what this might look like.
Yeah, so the test that we were taking is the temperaments, which is sanguine, phlegmatic, choleric, and melancholy. That's as much as I'm going to describe to you.
Gesundheit.
You can look it all up later if you'd like. But I have always tested as a phlegmatic choleric, which is somebody that needs peace and control. Like my core part is the phlegmatic is peace. Mm-hmm. Well, this time I tested very highly in the sanguine, which is the core part is fun. And I was like, this doesn't sound right to me. Like this, like I'm not a fun person. Like no, this doesn't sound right. But in going through it, as Pastor Lance was walking our whole staff through this, and he's reading about this and sharing about it, it's like, actually, this is more me right now.
I am fun.
I can be fun. I'm a real boy. you know, but one of the things that was interesting was, like, I was talking with some folks on my team about it, because I've never tested as as this personality. And they're like, actually, in the last year, that has become more of who you are. And I think in the last year, I've also experienced more health and more peace. I've been exercising more. I've been taking care of myself better. I've been, you know, I still got to get food under control. But, you know, one thing at a time. Mind your business.
One thing at a time.
But, you know, all of a sudden, I'm recognizing that I'm in a healthier space. And because of that, I'm actually more naturally going back to kind of probably more of what my core personality really is. Whereas the previous 5-6 years had been a lot of trauma response and trying to achieve something that was out of control before. And so now it's like, okay, yes, peace is a part of it. But the amount of times when I talk about an event that we're doing, hey, fun's got to be at the core of that. How much of that is like deep conviction because that's how these ministries grow? And how much of that is like, that's actually my deep conviction because if it's not fun, I don't want to go. And it's like, oh, that is so true. How many times have I talked about our staff meetings need to be fun? This thing needs to be fun. We need to enjoy this time. And it's like, oh, that is like a major talking point for me. And it was actually really helpful and encouraging that it's like, okay, I'm getting back to closer to how God has designed me than I have been in the past.
Would it be fair to say then that is that this is part of, like, obviously you experienced a lot of trauma and some difficult things in kind of life right before coming to Bridgeway. And that just through, and I know you've done a lot of work in this, but as you've kind of been able to heal from some of that, it's almost like this side of you that was almost like buried by it is starting to emerge.
Absolutely.
Which is odd, like, that's amazing. As someone who spends a lot of time with you, I'm like, yeah, you do. Like, you're saying that. I'm like, yeah, you do talk about fun an awful lot. Which, like, as someone who identifies as a seven, which sevens just want to have fun, I'm like, I'm here for it. I like it. And but I think what a great example of that is for us to be able to go, yeah, there is some hope for us to change over time. And specifically, and I wonder to what extent it's hard to see in the moment that we can only kind of see it in the rearview mirror to go, yeah, okay, I went through a traumatic season or I went through something really difficult. But over time, as I like to use the metaphor of wounds and scars, as the wound of that trauma turned into a scar, sort of this side of me was able to emerge. And I think even for those that are in the wound stage to be able to go, like, you're going to come back. It might take some time, but you can come back.
Absolutely. And I was just thinking about that with my kids too, of when, like, my daughter is sanguine, fun, Tigger personality, all up and down.
The best kind.
The best kind, and when she's not into that space, you can really tell. But then it comes back. And the hope that brings me is like, okay, I'm seeing God heal me in a really cool ways to where I'm getting back to this core piece of who I have always been in my past. And I needed a season away from that in order to heal, but look what God is doing. And that's the value of the personality test to me, is that it's evidence of God's work in my life. It's not evidence of my work in my life. It's what God is doing.
And just even the extent to which, you know, this little personality test can be just another sort of signpost along the way to show you evidence of that is pretty cool. So whether you're a DISC person or a Strength Finders or a Big Five or Enneagram or Myers-Briggs or whatever.
Or what house in Harry Potter you would be in.
What house in Harry Potter you would be in, that's right. I think what's important for us to recognize is that, number one, these are mirrors, not manuals. Mirrors in the sense that they sort of help us see current reality. They're not sort of the be-all and end-all of everything. But also, like a mirror, if you stare in the mirror for too long, you're just kind of a weirdo. So they can help us see where we're at, but also point a path forward and to recognize they are what they are. They're limited. They're not perfect, but they can be helpful in making us aware of who we are and helping us to grow. And that's always a good thing. We'll be right back.
All right, so we are going to play a little game.
Oh, sorry, I forgot. I've been meaning to say this before the last two segments. Update on Pastor Judah. Number one, he forgot, and we need to just remind everybody of that. He forgot this recording. He forgot this recording. He was supposed to be here, and he's not.
Yeah, but why did he forget?
I think it's just because he's a slacker.
No,
he's not a slacker.
He's very, very
sick. And he's sick and forgot to tell us. So, Pastor Judah, we pray that you get better.
Absolutely.
But first, we make fun of you for not being here when you're supposed to.
100%.
Go on.
So we're going to play a little game called I Know You're Lying. But because there's only two of us, we had to reach out to somebody else.
Yes, we did.
In order to go through. So Pastor Ashley has provided some categories for us.
Wonderful.
And so the first category that we have is bubble water brands. So sparkling,
Okay.
How many can you name, Brian?
I can name three.
I can name four.
I can name five, I think.
I know you're lying because I know I can't do more.
Spindrift.
Oh, my gosh.
That's like the premium, like fancy kind.
Wow.
LaCroix, Waterloo. I feel like saying Kirkland Signature is cheating because they have a brand for everything.
Yeah.
But I can picture their thing. Oh, my gosh. I'm like, oh, Arrowhead has a sparkling water. And does hop water count?
Sure.
Lagunitas hop water. There we go. Five.
You left out bubbly.
Bubbly.
You know, the non-beer sounding one.
The one that's named
Liquid
after.
Death has one.
Liquid Death does have one. That's true.
Yeah.
I just, you know, bubbly I should have gotten. I'm picturing, now I make all my sparkling water at home with a soda stream.
Oh,
so I don't buy it that often. Wow. But I'm like trying to picture, like I'll buy it if I have to go to an event or something.
It's the Kylie sparkling water.
It is the Kylie sparkling water. It is 72% as good as store-bought sparkling water.
72%. That's such a scientific number.
No, come on, you know this. I arbitrarily pull out statistics to say, yes, you know, where it is. But
60%
also,
of statistics are all made up.
I get my carbon dioxide, my CO2, from our good friends at Airgas here on our campus. So
Very nice.
They are my supplier for my sparkling water. All right, what's our next category?
So our next category is flavors of Jelly Belly jelly beans.
Oh, goodness. All right, you go first.
Two.
I can name five.
Oh, gosh. I don't eat Jelly Bellies, but I feel like I could probably make up enough. I can probably get to six.
Okay. I can name eight. Well, knockout punch.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm on the floor seeing stars.
Tutti Frutti, buttered popcorn, lime, lemon, cherry, black licorice, cinnamon, strawberry daiquiri, pina colada, and my 10th will be toasted marshmallow.
Overachieved.
Oh, said I said eight.
Yeah.
In my head, I said 10. So number one, I have loved Jelly Bellies over the years.
Oh, my gosh.
Number two.
I had no idea that I was giving you your own category.
We have recently had this, like, bag of Jelly Bellies in our, like, storage room here.
I feel like you and Ashley are
been raiding
in league with each other.
To eat a handful of Jelly Bellies and then deeply regret it later because my 42-year-old body gets really mad at me when I eat sugar. But there you go. The important thing is,
you won two.
I won two, and which is very rare.
I attempted none, which is actually a win for me.
There you go. Well, thank you for listening. Hopefully, Pastor Judah will be better and back with us next week. We hope you will be as well. We'll see you then. Bye-bye.